Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I'd like to start off with just giving you a little history about how I came to this practice. And then we'll get into the subject that I was going to talk about. I came to this practice a long, long time ago as a result of finding myself in the what I like to euphemistically refer as the infinite vortex of existential terror. And I was struggling with all the big questions. It wasn't a mental exercise. These were life and death issues for me at the time. And so I started out, of course, reading every book I could lay my hands on, you know, from Kierkegaard to Nietzsche to Heidegger and psychology books and philosophy and on and on. And nothing really, really worked. And then one day in the library, I happened to see this book with Z-E-N written on it. Zen, what the heck is that? So I took the book off the shelf and started looking through it. And there they were talking about all the things I was experiencing. Emptiness, the great doubt, you know, all these things. And I thought, perhaps I should look further into this. And that's sort of how I came to this practice. And as a result of the practice, one thing I learned, it became apparent after I had been practicing for a while, that was the discomfort and I was experiencing, I thought was coming from the world and the experience I was having. But it became apparent to me that the reaction I was having was due to, unbeknownst to me at the time, a system of beliefs that more or less were coming from a self-centered perspective, the perspective of the self. And that's what was generating the discomfort. And Zen, of course, also talked a lot about that. So that's what brought me to the practice, and that's what has kept me involved in the practice. So with that said, I'd like to get into the subject about beliefs. The title of my talk is Beliefs, Who Needs Them? And so I would like to start off with saying, what is a belief? At best, it seems to me, a belief is an educated guess at how things are. It's not, educated guesses are not enough in this practice. And this practice is about knowing, you know. And so, for example, if I have a box and I have a box on the table and it's locked and I have the key, and I tell you that there is a rare, precious stone in the box, but you can't look in the box because I have the key and you can't open it. So you sort of have to believe me or not believe me. Of course, there's another option of to not even be concerned about believing me or not, or be concerned with what's in the box. But if you are concerned with what's in the box, you have no choice but to believe me or not believe me until I open the box. And when I open the box and you look in it, you know, you now have knowledge of what's in that box or not in that box. And the belief is no longer a useful or relevant thing. So that's the difference, I hope it makes clear the difference between knowing and believing. And Our beliefs, for example, here's a really nice, simple example I've run into recently, and you've probably all heard about these guys, people who believe that the earth is flat. One of the inherent things about believing is beliefs lead to confusion and paradox because, no, let's see if I can say this. Beliefs don't really reflect things as they are. That's why they're a belief. They're not about, they're because we don't know how things actually are. So we have a belief about it. Like people who believe the earth is flat, despite the almost limitless amount of evidence there is to the contrary. And I was watching this documentary about these people, and they have this belief, and some of them try to be quite scientific about it. But even when they are confronted with the evidence that contradicts their belief, they still cling to the belief. Even once some of the people in this documentary performed an experiment involving gyroscopes that can tell you whether or not the Earth is a rotating sphere or not. And they got this gyroscope and it showed them that the Earth is a rotating sphere. Oh, nope, something wrong with the gyroscope. So they spent $20,000 on the state-of-the-art, absolutely precise instrument. And the same result, of course. The Earth is not a flat disk, it's a rotating sphere. But they still cling to the belief that it is flat. So the immediate question that comes to my mind is why? Why in the face of direct evidence, even of their own experiments, they still believe what they believe? It's one of the things about beliefs. And it differentiates a belief from a theory or an opinion or an idea. Beliefs sort of serve a purpose. And that purpose is to comfort and fortify our, tendency towards a self-centered perspective, a perspective that of a belief in the self. And so anything that undermines or threatens to undermine that belief is perceived as a threat to our identity. And I remember experiencing that when my beliefs became undermined and lost their significance in reality. I felt quite terrified and quite threatened. And it was really a threat to my identity. It wasn't about losing the beliefs. But our beliefs, we identify with our beliefs because they present us with a worldview that we identify with. And that's why it's hard to get people to change their beliefs. This presents, in relationship to our practice, I think this presents a problem. And the problem beliefs present is that they present an obstacle to awakening because we become attached to our beliefs unknowingly or unwittingly. And things that undermine them then are perceived as a threat and a threat to our identity. So the obstacle, so they present an obstacle, I think, to awakening, because awakening is about knowing, I think, not about believing. I have a couple of there's a couple of dreams I had, I think, that maybe help clarify this point. The first one is a dream I had. I went underground down these stairs. And when I got there was a big underground room. And there was this piece of ground and all these monks standing around the ground. And people were lined up and they would one at a time, lay on this plot of ground, and these monks would chant something, and the person would turn into a mist, and the mist was whisked off to paradise. So they say the person was then reassembled in paradise. That was the heart of the dream. And it was my turn to take this, lay down on this ground, but I had questions. And I said, how do I know this is really true? Maybe you're just being whisked away to nothing. So, and then I woke up. And I didn't understand this dream for quite a while. And then one time sitting, it came to me. The dream was saying, literally, we have to open ourselves to mystification. I mean, literally, it was saying that in the symbol of being turned into a mist, that you have to get through or beyond beliefs and concepts and ideas about the way things are. And because it's an ever-changing mystery. I mean, reality is never the same moment to moment. And so that's how I came to see the meaning of that dream. And it involved, again, it was because I was heavily into defending my beliefs and clinging, and I didn't know that, of course, but that's what was happening. And so my dreams were trying to tell me, no, you have to let go of all that stuff and not know and not be able to grasp it and contain it and define it. And then later on, I had another dream, which sort of is the same idea and the same principle, I think. I found myself in this huge building. Maybe it was a hotel, but it was huge. And there were all these people sitting around in a lobby, what appeared to be a lobby. And this giant picture window looked outside. And it was beautiful out there. And everyone was sitting around reading books. And I said, we should go outside. It's beautiful out there. And this one person turned to me and said, you can't go outside. So why not? He says, because we're all dead. This is the house of the dead, and we can't go outside. And I said, well, I'm not dead. I'm going to go outside. He said, well, there is one way to get outside. You have to find the red ticket, and then you have to bring it to the person who is the leader, the overseer of the house of the dead, and have him stamp it with his approval. And then you can get out of the house of the dead. So I immediately began looking for this red ticket everywhere, day and night. And sometimes I think I found it, but it just was a red cellophane candy wrapper or something. It never was the red ticket. And then I got news of an organization that had a systematic way of finding the red ticket. They had a technique. You join their organization and they would tell you, and you could get on the technique, the rules and the regulations and the process of finding the red ticket. So I did that in the dream. And that went on for quite some time. And again, many times I thought I had found it, but no, it wasn't the actual red ticket. After that went on for a while, at one point I became extremely tired of this and frustrated and just said, I'm done with this, to hell with the red ticket. And at that very moment, I was out. I was out of the house of the dead. And again, I thought, wow, what does all this mean? You know, thinking about that, it comes down to beliefs again. You know, the belief that we are trapped, the belief that we need to get out, we need to escape. And then the added belief of that there's a way to do that, that there's a prescribed way, like I was doing with reading philosophy books and science books and psychology books endlessly, that there's a prescribed way to do that. But again, when that was just all dropped in that moment of frustration, I was out. And it had been an illusion all along. You know, it was just all due to my beliefs, you know. So that's what I want to say about beliefs. And I'm talking and saying a lot of stuff that really amounts to a lot of concepts that maybe can add some clarification or understanding to this idea of beliefs and the role they play. And that's okay, but it's not enough. And I guess what I want to say is beliefs, my idea that beliefs present an obstacle to awakening. But there is a way to go straight through the barrier of beliefs as if they weren't there. Fortunately, what that is this practice. That's what matters, and that's what counts, and that's what gets us past the barrier of our beliefs, I think, and get us to be awake to how things actually are, and get us beyond the identifications that we have with our beliefs. I mean, we all do it, you know. Beliefs are an obstacle that this practice is a cure for. And that's about all I have to say about that. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Or
so a comment and a belief, or excuse me, a comment and a question. Number one, comment-wise, you know, there's another, you know, big part of that besides identity. It's a lot of people's beliefs have felt like they've kept them alive. You know, whatever they felt has worked for them up to that point, has helped them survive up to that point. So if you try and take certain beliefs away from people, it's going to be.
Oh, I can't hear you, James.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Sort of, you're breaking up.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're breaking up. But in response to that, I would say that I'm not suggesting we deprive anyone of their beliefs. I was talking about belief in relationship to this practice. I think I see Dave's hand up.
Just a couple of things that I was reminded of by your talk. And also the question from James just now about the function of beliefs. There's an amazing book by a fellow named Michael Shermer. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I know Michael Shermer. He's is that the same one who's in the Skeptic, runs the Skeptic magazine?
I don't think he runs it, but Michael Shermer wrote he's written a bunch of interesting books, but one of them is called The Believing Brain. And it's really a very long attempt to sort of dissect not only what does it mean when we say we believe something, but why would this be an evolved function of our brain and what does and doesn't it do that might or might not benefit us. The other thing, though, I wanted to sort of, I don't know if congratulate is the right word, but I'm quite struck by the sort of cinematic grandeur of your dreams. It's quite amazing.
Yes.
I don't really have dreams like that, but the particular dream that you had about the House of the Dead reminds me, there's a wonderful film by Luis Buñuel called Exterminating Angel. And it's very much the same kind of thing that you're talking about, all these people stuck in the House of the Dead. It's not actually the House of the Dead in the movie, but it's very similar. And the way that it's actually the open eyes of a child that allows them to escape from the House of the Dead, to stop believing that they're trapped.
Yeah.
Thank you for your talk.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you, Dave. I want to clarify. I was just talking about, I'm not saying we should deprive people or undermine people's beliefs. I was just talking about belief in relationship to this practice. But people believe things, and if it's helping them survive, which many people do, I suppose, and they have beliefs, at least they think it's helping them survive. But I just wanted to respond too to what Dave said about the believing brain. The implication being that there's some kind of built-in evolutionary wiring in our brain that makes us believe. I'm not so sure about that because I've seen through my beliefs, and I think everyone who gets sincerely and honestly involved in this practice does experience things as they are, and beliefs are no longer required. So anyway, I just wanted to comment on that because there's a lot of brain stuff flying around these days that I just find a little strange. As if Buddhism is reduced to the Buddhist, the truth of Buddhism is reduced to neurochemistry. It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, anyone else? Oh, great.
Hey Dong,
Hi.
thank you for sharing your dreams. We chant Heart Sutra, and then there is inverted views. Remember? Inverted views. Heart Sutra.
Heart Sutra, yeah.
There is inverted views.
What do you mean inverted?
Far beyond the inverted views, and then you realize whatever,
Oh,
Nirvana.
far beyond,
Yeah.
yeah, the views, yeah, right.
So, do you have a comment about beliefs versus inverted views?
I think that the things presented in the Heart Sutra are things to help us get beyond our beliefs, actually. I think that's one of the things the Heart Sutra helped me with, anyway. By things about emptiness is form, form is emptiness, no birth, no death, and no end to birth and death, and old age and sickness, and so on. Those views help me get beyond and get me through what I call the barrier of beliefs. I think the Heart Sutra is a great thing for that. Is that what you're asking, or?
I love to hear your comment about inverted views. So, inverted views is a belief?
I'm not sure what you mean by inverted views. The Heart Sutra, to me, talks about Avalokiteshvara was deeply practicing and perceived that all five skandhas were empty and was safe from all suffering and distress.
Yeah, but in the
Yeah.
end of the heart,
Sariputra, form is
yeah.
emptiness and emptiness is form. I'm not sure what you mean by inverted views.
Okay. Well, that's what I am asking. I'm asking in Heart Sutra, there is inverted views. So I'm wondering whether inverted views is the belief you're talking about.
No, I'm not talking about a belief. And the views that I find presented in the Heart Sutra, unless I'm reading something you're not, or you are, is all skillful expressions that help us beyond our beliefs, help us get through the barrier of beliefs.
You're right, and Heart Sutra help us to get over the beliefs. But when my question is, in Heart Sutra, there is inverted views. What is this?
Far beyond all inverted views.
Far beyond all inverted views.
Yeah, well, inverted views, then in that case, I read that as views that are beliefs, okay? That the Heart Sutra gets us beyond those things, and that's what I'm talking about, getting beyond our beliefs. And I think the Heart Sutra does a wonderful job of moving us in that direction.
Thank you.
Okay, I hope that helped.
Yeah, if you look at the Heart Sutra in a slightly more historical context, it really arose at a time when a lot of Buddhism was sort of fossilizing in the sense that it was, Stephen Batchelor likes to say, the great risk of Buddhism is that it turns into just another religion. When it goes through and it says, you know, there's no this, there's no that, there's no the other thing, it enumerates practically everything in Buddhism and says, no, there's none of that. What it's really saying is, don't turn those things into beliefs.
That's right. Even I think our practice is beyond religion, right? So even religion is beliefs.
Yeah. The Buddha says, you know, don't believe what I say because I said it, or you read it in a sutra, or you read it in a book, or somebody told you, find out for yourself. Which is another way of saying, practice, do the practice.
This is Umar. So I just wanted to ask, you know, we recite the Heart Sutra at least, I think, twice a month, once in Japanese and once in English. And after reciting it for so long, just come to realize that the Heart Sutra is saying something very simple. And all it's saying is, this too shall pass, you know? So, you know, it's just like saying, why are you carrying this? This too shall pass, you know? And this is, whatever you're holding on, this too shall come to pass, you know? And this is how I see it. And the other thing is, it's interesting that you're talking about beliefs, because I was, I had gone to a sort of seminar, and the hypnotist came on stage, and he hypnotized somebody, and he told this hypnotized person, here is an orange, and what he gave him was an onion. And under hypnosis, this person ate the onion as if it was an orange, with skin and all. So, you know, this is also like that sort of what you're talking about is belief. That when people give their power away to somebody else and let them hypnotize them, you know, and they have been tempered to be hypnotized from the very beginning. What you were saying about holding on to your beliefs, you were also, it seems to me that you were tempered into holding on to your beliefs. And once you let go of that sort of temperament, you know, everything becomes easier. You won't be eating an onion like an orange. You know, that's what it is.
Yes, Umar. Thank you for sharing that. And I was, you know, I mean, I went over it pretty quickly, but I spent many, 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 many years in the vortex of existential terror. And until I came to this practice, I had made no progress of getting through it or seeing through it. I came to Canando, and I had no idea if Zen was effective or not, and I didn't care. It was like the House of the Dead thing. I said, that's it. I'm just going to do this. I am just going to make the effort of doing this practice. And through the persistence of that, things cleared up. And I was found myself not ever having really been in a vortex. That was all due to my perspective. My perspective of believing in the self, you know, without even really knowing that, without even really being aware of that. That's where we are the source of our own problems. That those kind of beliefs create the problems and the suffering, not the world as it is. The world as it is just fine. It's just effortlessly unfolding moment to moment.
Yeah, it's really interesting you brought that up, because, you know, all of our problems, you know, if somebody comes and hurls insults at me and throws things at me, and if I take offense to it, then, you know, all that stuff is coming from from inside of me outside. It's not somebody throwing something at me.
Right.
And that's where it starts to change, that you can start seeing that it's, this is what is happening, that everything is moving from inside out and it's no outside in.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a very interesting point that you're bringing up. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Umar. Yeah. Okay, James, you're back.
Yes. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
What specific beliefs are you talking about that we need to give up in order to do this practice?
I would say any belief is an obstacle, but specifically, I would say the belief in the self. It's the main one that is an obstacle to our awakening. But there are lots of others, I think. I don't want to name any. I don't want to,
How can we get rid of the belief of self? It's an incredibly powerful belief.
Yes, the practice, doing this practice. I can tell you, I read every book there is to read, and this can clarify and help your understanding, but that's not enough. You have this practice is what I've found that will help get you beyond the belief in the self. That's one thing it does very well.
So I'm a little confused. Your talk said you had to get rid of certain beliefs in order to do this practice.
No. The practice is one way I will say this. This practice is an antidote to the problem of beliefs, to the barrier of beliefs. That's what this practice addresses very, very well.
You're talking Zen Buddhism, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And in your experience, it's helped you get over the belief in self. Is that right?
Absolutely. Now,
and how long did that take?
That always tried. It took me about 6 or 7 years, but that always results. But it tries to reassert itself. It took me about 6 or 7 years of taking this practice quite seriously, and it happened during a sesshin. Actually, during a break during a sesshin, I had that experience of. It's nothing grand. It's just that there was the tree and the leaf and the ground and the clouds and me and the dirt and this and there wasn't this special guy named Don there, you know. It was just the infinite moment effortlessly unfolding, and everything is and was and will always be that effortlessly unfolding moment. That was the experience, and it was beyond self. And so that's what this practice addresses. And I think the way to get beyond that belief is this practice. That's one of the points I was trying to make tonight. So I'm glad you brought that up so I could clarify that. Thank you all for listening and participating and contributing. I enjoyed your questions very much.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.